Welcome back to North Idaho Now. This is episode 101. That's 101. Mm. Like the Dalmatians. Did you watch that movie, Josh?
But with
the new one?
Less murder in the new one?
Yeah.
First off, it wasn't a new 101 Dalmatians.
It was a Cruella movie.
It was a movie about Cruella.
Sorry.
She is a sympathetic character now in my mind.
Oh.
And you will never tell me otherwise.
Oh, we're rewriting the history books now with even Boba Fett too. Anyway, Josh, who's sponsoring us today?
This episode is brought to you by Silver Corner Bar. While Wallace is known for the last working stoplight on I-90 between Seattle and Boston, it wasn't the only red light in town. Did you know the historic Wallace-famed Silver Corner Bar sits beneath an old brothel? The Lux Rooms Airbnb lets you step back in time and experience the history of a former bordello. The two-story brick building has been converted into boutique hotel rooms. The bordello operated illegally yet openly for nearly a century before closing in 1989. Stop in and say hello. Rooms named after girls like Barb, Frenchie, Cha-Cha, and Ginger offer a perfect spot for a unique and romantic getaway. This message is brought to you by the Wallace Women's Temperance Guild, fighting to rid Wallace of the evils of the drink one minor at a time.
I love that ad.
I feel like I shouldn't be reading the last part of it. I mean, I don't think the Wallace Women's Temperance Guild wouldn't allow a male member, but me mansplaining
strongest
to you.
Strongest supporter. What,
we're not allowed to join, but.
We're big fans.
But yeah, but we, like the hang arounds of a biker gang, they're not old ladies. They're just the girls that the bikers kind of, you know.
I've seen Sons of Anarchy.
I'm the hang around of the Wallace Women's Temperance Guild.
Perfect. Like, perfect.
Yeah.
So we were just talking about that real quick, Dalmatians. And then have you watched the Book of Boba Fett at all?
I watched the first episode. Okay. I know there's mixed reviews and Star Wars purists are up in arms about various components of it. I know the one thing I don't really like, it's a gritty story of a, like Tatooine in and of itself is supposed to be this, like, almost like the space version, the Star Wars version of, like,
Costa Mesa.
Tombstone, Arizona.
Yeah, it's supposed to be middle of nowhere. No one goes. It's a desolate rock.
Right.
And yet half the Star Wars universe revolves around Tatooine.
Yeah, so there's that, and then like they changed the name of Boba Fett's ship.
Yeah,
like which is a Disney. It's a PC move.
It's a PC move. But
it's like it didn't. That was one of the things I don't think needed to be.
No, and it had. There was an explanation for it why it was called Slave One.
Wasn't Boba Fett or Jango Fett was a slave.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, it was like a never again kind of thing.
Exactly. But
I don't know.
No,
and then
it's
Boba Fett wanting to lead the Hutt's gang through.
He's supposed to be the most notorious bounty hunter in the galaxy. And like now he's like,
I want to lead you with respect.
Yeah. I want to be a nice guy now.
Right.
And
he's really bad line away from being Dominic Toretto. Here at the Hutts on Tatooine, we're family.
Yeah, we're family. Family.
I'm going to lead you with respect because we're family.
Family. Come on, family. Yeah, I can see that. And they're really trying to make this guy who was supposed to be a bad guy. Remember, this is the guy who carbonated Han Solo and brought him to Jabba, and then also worked with Darth Vader. Like, this is a bad guy, yet we're supposed to be like...
Darth Vader's got this dude on speed dial.
Yeah. We're rewriting history to make Boba Fett a sympathetic, you know, good-natured crime lord.
He's a nice gangster.
Oh, and not to mention, I'm going to use R1 cuss word here, sorry. He's still getting his ass kicked. Like, Boba Fett...
Yeah, where do we pick up? He's been eaten.
He continues to get just absolutely beat up all the time.
That's me, Boba Fett.
I know
you're probably wondering how I got here.
Yeah, I know off screen we're supposed to believe that he's the best bounty hunter in the galaxy and everybody fears him, but on screen all I see is him getting beat up a lot.
Like in terms of bounty hunters that are in the middle of action pack sequences, at least Greedo was in like a shootout. And we might never know who drew first, but we know who ended up dead.
I've seen Raylan Givens, Timothy Oliphant's character in
Justified.
In Justified, yeah. I saw him in one episode of Mandalorian use Boba Fett's backpack more than Boba Fett has.
Yeah. So I don't know. It's I don't mind because, like, obviously Disney did the Maleficent movies, which are a take on the bad guy from Sleeping Beauty, the evil fairy from Sleeping Beauty. I don't want to say bad guy. Kind of turns her into a sympathetic figure. Cruella's story is very much like a story of like a sympathetic figure.
It's a redemption
mixed with,
story.
Mixed
for...
with some very, very, very interesting mental, a very interesting take on mental health and mental illness. Cruella might be, it might be one of the, my favorite movies of last year.
Really?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Top to bottom. Plus, like, Emma Stone is as close to perfection as you get on
Fantastic
this planet.
I don't think I've ever seen anything that she's bad in.
Yeah. Yeah, even, like, super bad.
She's been in bad movies, but it wasn't bad because of her.
I don't know if I've ever seen her in a bad movie.
There's something. There was some off the wall. Like,
oh, no, it's... All right, we'll look. Let's take a look. Okay. Oh, we're going
to
look.
Well, I wanted to jump over real quick. Speaking of controversial things, Josh, overtime in the NFL.
Ugh. It's not controversial. In fact...
Oh, it's not?
No.
They have my Twitter feed hasn't been blowing up about how we should change NFL overtime.
By people who are just upset that their team didn't win.
Well...
There's nothing... So, could it be better? Yes. Could it be worse?
Do you think
yes.
the Bills should have gotten the ball back to try to get a touchdown?
No. I think the Bills' defense should have tried to slow down Kansas City, maybe hold them to a field goal, maybe force them to punt, not let them score in five plays. Like, football is a game of two sides of the ball. Just the quarterback, yeah. He might
it's
be
two sides of the ball, so ergo, the Bills should get a second
no,
chance.
No, their defense didn't do what it needed to do to give their
but
offense an opportunity.
But okay, I understand what you're saying. I get it. Based on the rules that's there, yes. But also, the team that wins the coin toss is at a significant advantage to win in overtime. So I'm saying that you shouldn't be afforded that advantage.
The team who has the ball first in the game has a significant opportunity to win the game. If they score first and then their defense shows up and holds the rest of the team out of the end zone the rest of the game, what's the difference? What if they don't ever score again? They had the ball first.
Right, but there's multiple times to get redemption on that. Like the return, the possession of the ball will go back to the other team and they get a chance to score. It's just like, I understand, like, okay, from a hockey perspective, I know like football fans are rolling their eyes right now, but like overtime, it's sudden death overtime. First goal wins. Like
So it used to be like that in the NFL where first points scored. And so teams would get into field goal range and just kick a field goal and the game would be over.
Right. Which is messed up.
So they took that away.
Okay.
And they said that now, if you want to win without letting the other team on the field, you have to score a touchdown. So that means the defense, if they kick the ball off and the team takes the touchback, they get the ball on the 25-yard line. So you are starting. You have 75 yards to go to win that game outright. If your defense, the opposing defense, can't stop you in that first drive, then what's the point?
I still think the team that lost the coin toss should get a possession to try to...
If it was a field goal, then yes.
Like it should be like a game of skate or horse. Like if the team that got the possession first gets the touchdown, then the other team gets one possession to get a touchdown.
So you're advocating for college overtime.
Yes, I am advocating for college overtime.
Okay, I say college overtime is probably the solution that makes the most sense to gratify everybody's desire.
Probably.
I'm not saying it's a controversial finish.
I don't think
I don't think the rule is controversial.
I think it's kicked up a lot of debate.
It kicked up a lot of debate 3 years ago when
Kansas City
lost to New England in overtime.
Yeah.
And it kicks up.
Kansas
but
City
it doesn't
petitioned
ever,
at the time to change the rule.
Right. Just because they lost.
Right. Well, and what I'm saying is like it would be kind of cool for Kansas City to, like, now that they're on the other side of that, if they still advocated that, that would be kind of cool.
Andy Reid did say that he believes that winning the coin flip helped them win the game because they weren't stopping Josh Allen on the other side. You know what, though? The whole thing boils down to you've got to be able to play both sides of the ball. And for as great as that game was and as great and as memorable and everything, the one thing that will always come out of it is that at the end of the day, the Bills went on these long drives to keep themselves in the game, mm-hmm. to take the lead, to retake the lead. It took Kansas City two plays to get into field goal range with 13 seconds left mm-hmm. when the coach could have squib kicked the ball and taken that down to one possession. So he ruined that. So the coach messed that up. Then it took him like five or six plays to score a touchdown. Like where it took Josh Allen, the quarterback for the Bills, actually having to run the ball like a running back and run into head first into defenders to keep that drive going. Multiple fourth downs. Mm-hmm. On the flip side, it took Buffalo's defense couldn't do anything. That's right. They could not get a stop.
I get it.
I don't believe in a game that requires both sides of the team to be good.
What I'm saying, everything you just said, I agree with. What I'm saying is that allowing the other team to get possession invalidates the advantage that a coin toss gives to the winning team of that coin toss.
Yeah.
Like it allows them a chance at redemption. Like you shouldn't be punished for losing a coin toss.
I heard us that yeah, but you're not punished. You're punished because you're
you are punished. No.
No, you're not.
If the Bills win the coin toss though,
and they go down and drive and Kansas City doesn't stop them, they're that.
Okay, well, you just basically admitted that the coin toss won the Bills the game.
No, it wouldn't. It would be because Kansas City's lack of defense wouldn't win them the game.
If both teams have useless defenses and cannot stop the ball.
Neither of them have useless. Both of them have top 10 NFL defenses.
What I'm saying is let's say in a world where it's assumed that whoever is going to win the coin toss and get possession, they are going to drive it down for a touchdown.
Only 20% of NFL overtime games are won in the first possession.
Okay.
20% since that rule changed back when Tim Tebow mm-hmm. was mm-hmm. the first person to take advantage of it against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
What's Tim Tebow up to nowadays?
He was a failed tight end for the Jaguars, and I think he's back to like either like being like some sort of weird street preacher or baseball analyst. Not sure.
Something on
those lines. But
him and Colin Kaepernick should make a show.
20% of NFL overtimes end in the first possession.
Okay.
So that's really not that high of a number. That is indicative that if 100 of them happen, 20 of them go first possession, that means that 20 times a defense wasn't good enough to stop them.
Okay. Okay. Well, we'll let the listeners decide. With the remaining four teams left, who do you want to win and who do you think's going to win?
Kansas City's got to be the odds-on favorite. They've been in the Super Bowl the last 2 years, mm-hmm. winning one of them. And then last year they got crushed due mainly to a lot of injuries. Kansas City was unhealthy. Their offensive line was not – it was a shell of itself, and Tampa Bay's defense was that good.
So you think the Chiefs are going to win?
I think the Chiefs are the only team that right now I would say are – it should be.
There's a favorite.
It's easy money.
Okay.
Easy money.
Now, who do you want to win the remaining teams?
The Bengals beat my Titans. So all four games that were played over this last weekend were all decided on the final play.
Yep.
Including a 19-16 loss by my Titans to the Cincinnati Bengals.
That being said,
the Bengals are young. They were a lottery team 2 years ago. Joe Burrow was like the first overall pick. So to go from picking a quarterback first overall last year to the AFC Championship game this year with that same quarterback coming off of an ACL injury.
Pretty impressive.
When they didn't apparently have an offensive line that still doesn't really do them any favors, but Joe Burrow is that good. Joe Burrow, I would love to see Joe Burrow and the Bengals beat the Chiefs.
Does Cincinnati have any other teams?
They have the Reds in baseball.
Okay.
And then they have like the Cincinnati Bearcats for college.
Okay. But they're not like a
no,
they don't have the full smorgasbord.
I don't believe they have a hockey or a basketball team.
I don't think they do either.
Maybe
minor leagues, but probably. Not. Probably minor leagues.
And then, you know, the Rams will always be the natural enemy of any Titans fan, because they literally stopped us like an inch short of winning a Super Bowl in our first year. Mm-hmm. Matthew Stafford, on the other hand, is playing like a man possessed. He is responsible for the two best seasons by a wide receiver. He's been the quarterback behind both of them.
So you're hoping for the Bengals, but you've got what, Chiefs over?
I would say Chiefs over Rams seems like the most logical, but the Rams haven't beaten the 49ers in the last five attempts.
Ooh. Sounds like the 49ers have the number.
They're division rivals, but like, so the 49ers beat them twice this year, but they have to go because of the way the record settled. They're playing against the Rams in LA, whereas they still have the better head-to-head record. You shouldn't count the 49ers out. They just stopped Aaron Rodgers, who's arguably the greatest thrower of the football in the league right now. Held him to 13 or 10 points. I apologize, 10 points.
Where did the Rams come from again?
They were in St. Louis.
That's right.
And then they, well, they were in LA. Then they went to St. Louis. Now they're back in LA.
What were they when they were in LA?
They were the Rams.
Oh, they've always been the Rams?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I actually think there was a point where the Arizona Cardinals were in St. Louis, and they were the St. Louis Cardinals.
There are a lot of Rams down in Southern California?
Both football and baseball were both Cardinals at the time.
Okay.
The Ram, I don't know why LA Rams. I mean, strange. Are there a lot of Titans in Tennessee? I don't know.
Maybe.
Could I don't know if there's still Vikings in Minnesota. I know there's a bunch of people.
The descendants of Vikings.
People with really bad accents.
What is off of SpongeBob? Hinga dinga darga.
Yeah.
Happy Leif Erickson.
Give me Bengals. Give me Bengals Rams. Any of the four teams. If it's the 49ers and the Chiefs, then it's a rematch from 2 years ago.
That'd be fun.
If it's the 49ers and the Bengals, it's a rematch from the 1982 Super Bowl, which
That's
was
cool.
The first Super Bowl ever called by John Madden, and to this day is the most watched football game of all time.
Who won that one?
The 49ers.
Yeah. I have
Joe Montana.
When was the last time the Bengals, like, it's kind of one of those teams that's been off the radar as long as
1982.
I've been alive. 1982 was the last time they were relevant. Okay.
Yeah. They've had some really good teams.
Have they ever won a Super Bowl?
No.
Oh.
Not to my knowledge.
Ooh.
The last time they were there was 82, though.
Okay.
But they haven't. I mean, they've had some opportunities. They've won their division. They've had like the number one defense. They've had great offenses. And between coaching gaffes, a couple years ago when Vontaze Burfict cracked Antonio Brown in the head and led to the unsportsmanlike conduct penalty that put the Steelers in position to kick a game-winning field goal. Andy Dalton being at times one of the best gunslinging quarterbacks in the league, and then at other times being like a walking head case. The Bengals have remained interesting while not doing anything.
Okay.
This year, though, Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and Joe Mixon, and I mean, they have the best group of wide receivers in the league.
Okay. Right. So what you're saying is we've got a decent looking Super Bowl.
We should. It's going to have a lot of. There's going to be storylines, no matter what.
I like it. That's what sports all
you're
about.
Either, really. You're either getting a rematch, you're either getting two really high profile Super Bowl rematches, or you're going to get
very unique matchups.
Or you're going to get the culmination of the Matthew Stafford redemption story. This guy was the number one overall pick out of Georgia, spent like a decade toiling in Detroit, where him and Calvin Johnson created the before this year. It was the greatest season for a wide receiver of all time when he had like. It was like 1,700 receiving yards and like a ridiculous amount. This year, him and Cooper Kupp linked up. Cooper Kupp ended up being the Triple Crown winner. Most catches, most yards, most touchdowns, all by a receiver. So the two best receiving seasons have been Matthew Stafford throwing to two guys. Coming from Detroit, he'd probably have the entire city of Detroit cheering him on.
Probably. And I mean, the Lions haven't been good as long as I've been alive.
So. Right. So this right now, the Rams are basically the Lions.
Oh,
because
okay.
Everyone is like, right. They're still in love with Stafford.
Sure. No,
and
got
he
it.
Gave them 10 really like, good
we
years.
We want you to succeed, young
yeah,
man.
Not even young. He's in his 30s now.
Carry like, on. Like, carry yeah, on my wayward.
Like, we're so sorry we did this to you. Please go be great.
Right.
We love you.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, all right. On that note, before we transition into.
Picture Robert Redford looking over his shoulder with a beard and giving him the smile.
Said for some reason, I thought of Wilford Brimley.
Diabetes
testing supply. Did you know that the average Idahoan drank 697 alcoholic drinks in 2021?
600?
697 alcoholic drinks in 2021. The average Idahoan. It's an email that just popped up in front of my face.
That can't be right. 600?
The average Idahoan drank 697 alcoholic drinks in 2021, 2% less than the previous year.
That makes more sense, but that's still... I mean, there's got to be some outliers that are really high that are anchoring that statistic.
697. So that's...
That's two a day.
That's two a day.
Roughly two a day. That's not real.
The averages are... Somebody is really... someone's pumping up those numbers.
Yeah.
I could say that if I do drink, it's not one for sure, but I'm definitely not drinking
enough to anchor those numbers.
There's no way. And I don't drink daily enough at all or at all. Yeah, at all. So, okay. That's interesting. Maybe you guys will hear a story on this later on. We'll get a hold of us.
Jeez.
We'll go interview somebody. All right, let's move into Coeur d'Alene Post Falls Press headlines. But first, have you heard about the Dave Smith Adoption Program? Every month, Dave Smith Motors is sponsoring a dog from Shoshone Pet Rescue and cats from the Silver Valley Cat Wranglers, Lorna's Lovelies, and covering the adoption fees 100%. This month, they're sponsoring Paula, a one-year-old sweet, loving, and funny dog. For more information, please contact Shoshone Pet Rescue at 208-512-3401. They're also sponsoring Donnie, a one-year-old male cat. He is very sweet and loving. For more information, please contact the Silver Valley Cat Wranglers at 208-446-7131. Also, Nicholas, an 11-year-old male cat. So one very young, one very old. He's a one-eared big boy who's a little shy at first. For more information, please call Lorna's Lovelies at 208-704-5180. A one-eared Paula, cat.
Paula, Donnie, and Nicholas sounds like a really, really bad 70s. Like we're going to go on the road with Paula, Donnie, and Nicholas. All right. Saturday, January 22nd. Headline, witnesses describe bloody shooting. This is by Kay Thornbrew. A man shot in the neck sought refuge inside a coffee stand and gas station. Employees used aprons as tourniquets during a shooting last year. Witnesses painted a picture the day Tyson Sterkel allegedly shot two people at a Post Falls gas station before going on a crime spree. Sterkel, 32, of Old Town, is charged with 9 felonies, aggravated assault, 2 counts of aggravated battery, 2 counts of possession of a stolen vehicle, operating a motor vehicle without the owner's consent, robbery, burglary, and eluding. He is also charged with 2 counts of unlawful entry with a possession of a controlled substance. All misdemeanors. After preliminary hearing Tuesday, Magistrate Judge Patrick McFadden ruled that enough evidence exists to bind the case over to the district court. The charges stem from a December 2nd incident when Post Falls police responded to reports of a shooting at the Conoco gas station at the corner of Highway 41 and Poline Avenue, just down the street from Post Falls High School. A 30-year-old man was shot in the neck, police said. He was reportedly sitting in his car when a bullet flew through his windshield. In court Tuesday, the man said he heard a loud pop and then couldn't hear or see anything for a time. Quote, I thought I must have been struck by lightning because it was so loud and disorienting, he said. I couldn't feel anything. I was numb down my face and arm. After noticing a hole in his windshield, he patted himself down, looked in a mirror, and saw a nickel-sized hole in his neck. He said he ran to a nearby coffee stand and banged on the window. Panicked baristas let him in. The man underwent surgery for his injury. He told the court the bullet tore through several muscles. The wound inhibits his ability to move his neck and one arm, he said. A 30-year-old man said he was about to get out of his vehicle to pump gas when he heard a loud bang. Though he said he saw Sterkel holding a gun, he didn't think he was in any danger. Then his ear started ringing. It wasn't until he got out of his vehicle and put weight on his leg that he realized he had been shot just below the knee. Law enforcement said the shooting appeared to be random with no connection between Sterkel and the injured individuals. After the shooting, witnesses said Sterkel fled the scene in a gold pickup. Police said Sterkel ditched the pickup and stole a different vehicle from behind a barn. Sterkel stopped again, police said, and allegedly forced a man at gunpoint to switch vehicles with him before driving off. That man testified that he resisted at first because he thought Sterkel's rifle was fake. Then he said Sterkel cocked the rifle. Quote, at that point, I knew it was a real gun, the man said. I just thought to myself, well, I guess he's taking the truck. From there, Sterkel allegedly tried to hide in 2 different residences. A woman testified that she was working from home when Sterkel opened her unlocked front door and tried to enter. He was holding a gun. He said he needed a place to hide. In an effort to get him to leave, the woman said she told Sterkel to hide behind the shop on her property. Sterkel's foot was in the doorway, she said, so she couldn't close it. The pair struggled, she said, before she managed to shut the door.
Man, what a...
Sterkel then left the scene. Another woman said she was home alone when Sterkel walked through the front door armed with a rifle. Deputies from Cooney County Sheriff's Office spotted Sterkle driving along the railroad tracks along Highway 53. When he refused to stop, law enforcement reportedly pinned his vehicles from both sides, disabling it. Police took Sterkle into custody and transported him to Kootenai Health to be evaluated before booking him into jail. At the hospital, Sterkle reportedly asked about the people he shot, and he said he hoped they were okay. He reportedly told police he had used meth on the day of the shooting and believed people had been following him all day. Sterkle allegedly said he believed some of the cars at the Conoco had been tailing him. Post Falls Police Detective Brian Wilson testified that Sterkle seemed alarmed when he learned he'd hit someone in the neck and another person in the leg. Quote, he seemed pretty upset about that, Williams said. He asked if he killed them. I didn't have the answer. He was really upset. Sterkle remains in jail on $2 million bond. Don't do meth.
Yeah, I think that might be the lesson from all of this. I remember when we first wrote about this story, it came out and he was like, the guy was in genuine shock that he had caused so much damage and was, it's nuts. I mean, that's crazy.
Like, just imagine, like, so you're sitting there in court and all these people are like, and then you did this, and then you did that, and then you did this, and then you walked into my house, and then you left, and then you walked into my house, and you're just sitting there going, dang, that was some great meth.
Yeah, I
like realistically, this dude was so hopped up that he was on a mini terror spree throughout Post Falls. I mean, that's the little gas station there right before you get to Post Falls High School. So, I mean, this could have affected any number of people. Like, I know exactly where this all was. I know where the coffee stand was. I know where this gas station is. Like, this dude was not in a good way, and it sounds like he made some mistakes, and hopefully before the world quickly condemns him, because it sounds like he's not going to he's not going to fight much of this.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound like there's any way he can. Hopefully he gets help and treatment and all that stuff, because you know, people that aren't, you know, dealing with mental health issues or hopped up on drugs or whatever the situation may be, people who are in a good spot in their life don't do stuff like
this.
That's
very true. It's very true. And that means that they're dealing with something.
Oh, this next story.
Let's just pour it on.
I'm angry about this.
Justice for Reddington must wait. This is by Han and Neff. A sentencing for a man who shot a dog and caused the loss of an eye has been postponed. Reddington, an almost 7-year-old red border collie, had an eye removed after he was shot with a metal pellet gun at close range June 19th, 2021. Ugh. Owners Christian and Jade Harlocker said they received a sound alert from their outdoor security camera while about a mile from their Hayden home and noticed their neighbor was playing angry music loudly and yelling. Christian and his then-soon-to-be brother-in-law went home and found the border collie, along with Jade's sister and dog, cowering in the bushes. The dogs were in the backyard, which is bordered by a chain-link fence. Both of Reddington's eyes were swollen shut, and Christian said that after a brief encounter with the neighbor, he learned the neighbor was highly intoxicated. Christian said the neighbor told him, quote, "I told you I was going to shut your dogs up." He said they believed the neighbor lured the dogs to the fence with treats before shooting the pellet gun. Reddington was taken to an emergency clinic where his eye was removed the following day. What kind of piece of shit? That's two cuss words, but that's fine. Like, I think that's merited.
Keep reading.
I know it gets worse. I know.
They don't put the guy's name in here for a good reason.
Mm-hmm. The neighbor was cited in June for misdemeanor animal cruelty and pleaded guilty in November. The sentencing set for Friday was postponed. Another date has yet to be set. Quote, "We would like to have a resolution, but we understand the judge's decision and look forward to it in the next year," Christian said. "We are certainly working to resolve this action." Christian said Reddington has an amazing personality. Penny Collinson, a friend of the Harlockers, came to the courthouse to show support for Reddington and spread awareness of her Facebook group to strengthen Idaho's animal cruelty laws. Quote, "I formed this group so the entire state of Idaho can participate in having a conversation," Collinson said. "It's a place where they can go and people can communicate." Collinson's group, Citizens of Idaho Against Domestic Animal Abuse, has grown to almost 2,000 members since it was formed in 2019. I'll join up. Their goal is to make animal cruelty a first offense felony. Couldn't agree more. According to Idaho statutes, animal cruelty is only punishable by felony after the third offense within 15 years of the first conviction. A first violation is punishable by a fine of no less than $100 or more than $5,000, or by incarceration of not more than 6 months, or by both fine and imprisonment. Each case is decided on a case-by-case basis, and arrests aren't always made. Animal welfare Welfare's Institute's Animal Cruelty Reporting Scoreboard ranked Idaho as the worst state in the nation for reporting animal abuse in the 2020 analysis. Idaho was also at the bottom of the list for its efforts to track animal cruelty crimes. Collinson said making animal cruelty a first offense felony would allow a judge to not have his hands tied when something bad happens. Quote, "That man shot Jade's dog's eye out and almost killed her dog," Collinson said. "There's not going to be a felony because it doesn't exist. He's never done it before." Collinson said a stepping stone to change Idaho state law would be to strengthen animal cruelty laws in each country. County, rather. Quote, "We're trying to change it locally here in Kootenai County, but we need to be heard," Collinson said. "The Facebook group is where we go and we have that conversation and we get everybody to join so we can make that happen. There is no money exchange in the group. If someone wants to offer support, they can donate to a local shelter or vet in the group's name." The Harlockers are part of the Collinson's Facebook group and said they'll be working with it and any other organization they can find to get the word out. Quote, "Truthfully, the laws in Idaho do need to change," Christian said. "They need to get with the times. They need to be more accommodating and more reflective of how people feel about their companion animals." Visit IdahoForPets, that's all one word, .com to join the Facebook group. Okay, I mean, it sounds like things are going in the right direction. Laws might be changed. I don't necessarily like that this guy is only getting a pushed out misdemeanor, but whatever.
I want his name.
I'm sure a lot of people do. What kind of person can... Never even when, I mean, we're going back to alcohol here, but never in my life have I ever angry drunks. I don't get that either. But how could you take, I don't think there is any logic to it, honestly. I just don't think there is. I see you fuming over there. Animals are protected. They should be anyway.
Hecla Mining Company is a leading low-cost silver producer with operating silver mines in Alaska, Idaho, and Mexico, and is a growing gold producer with operating mines in Quebec, Canada, and Nevada. They are the largest primary silver producer in the United States, responsible for one-third of the silver produced in our nation. Their philosophy is to operate mines safely by promoting a deeply rooted value-based culture, leveraging mining skills developed over the company's long history, and by innovating new practices. To learn more about Hecla Mining Company, visit hecla-mining.com.
All right, the moves and do Sunday, January 23rd headlines.
Headline, problematic pollution in the Pacific.
Atta girl, Devin.
Yeah. A massive cluster of trash swirls in the North Pacific Ocean. It's known as the Great Garbage Patch, a vortex of marine debris composed of cheap fishing nets, mostly plastic pollution that degrades into smaller and smaller pieces. The Great Pacific Garbage Patch is bounded by the North Pacific subtropical gyre. A gyre is a large system of swirling ocean currents as defined by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Well, we're really pouring on the positive news today, aren't we?
NOAA. This gigantic collection of garbage is so huge, scientists can't trawl it, and it's nearly impossible to measure. It's estimated to be 617 square miles, according to PBS, and weighs more than 43,000 cars. Hmm. It contains bottles, toothbrushes, styrofoam cups, shoes, deadly plastic bags that turtles often confuse for jellyfish, one of their favorite foods. Hmm. Reed Harlocker.
From the last story?
No, but this is a different Harlocker family. Okay. I just went back. Reed Harlocker is about to go see the Great Garbage Patch in person. Quote, "I started reading about this, how this plastic gets to where it is," said Harlocker of Hayden. Quote, "Everything we have in plastic is derived from these small plastic beads. Across the world, we don't recycle plastics very well. We think we do, but we don't. Plastics are being flushed down rivers, shoved into the oceans." The Pacific plastic pollution problem hits home for Harlocker, a semi-retired communications engineer who is originally from Hawaii. In February and March, he'll team up with the conservation education group Pangea Exploration. They'll board the 72-foot Sea Dragon expedition yacht and travel to remote islands and atolls to examine how plastic pollution is damaging coral reefs, wildlife, and overall ocean health. Quote, "We're going to Fanning Island and one other, making stops, diving onto the reef and onto beaches, sifting and looking to see what plastic components are in the environment," Harlocker said. Harlocker will enjoy the scenery and adventure while collecting data to provide a snapshot of the pollution that is choking the world's oceans and ocean life. One of Pangea's goals is to share threats to the oceans with scientists. Policy lawmakers, commercial leaders, and everyday people. Quote, "The more that I know, the better I can explain it to people," Harlocker said. "All of us are of the same opinion. We need to get out of plastics. We're all guilty. I'm guilty of it. I don't know what the answer is."
Another modern day issue. First off, I want to say, when I go to the store,
617 square miles.
That's a lot. That's a lot. That's really big. I'll admit. So, like, you know, I always take a middle ground on this because, like, on one hand, like, the trash that we accumulate here, and like, we're recording this episode in Shoshone County. Okay, the odds of any of our trash, like plastic or otherwise, making it to the ocean are very slim. The trash that is taken here is collected and taken to a landfill in Missoula where it's buried in the ground. So probably low odds that we're contributing to ocean pollution. But you've got a lot of major cities that are along the coast, Seattle, LA, San Francisco. You know, we're talking major cities that are along the, and not to mention around the world, the Pacific Ocean is very big and you've got a lot of major cities that are on coast that are contributing to this. So I absolutely agree with him. I think that while plastic is definitely should be, we should find alternative means for plastic. I think we should also recognize, though, that plastic is pretty invaluable in our industry, in our.
Do not simp for plastic right now.
Sorry, man. Plastic is, it's a very useful tool.
He says drinking out of a plastic.
That's a plastic water bottle. That's what it, now, okay, but that being, okay, I do want to, I will, to be contradictory as hell, every time I go to the grocery store, when I have, I prefer paper bags over plastic, not from like a moral stand. I just like paper bags more. I feel like I can carry them better.
You like to go home and crinkle them up and turn them into little
that too?
Mock Native American vests.
Yeah. No, I put them on my school books.
Very specific reference. Mm-hmm. Shoshone County is 2,633 square miles.
So this is bigger than Shoshone County.
Yes.
It's pretty big.
Hold on.
And as much as Americans like to whip ourselves on things nowadays, I'm going to be honest, like, you know, how much of that is coming from us?
Idaho is 83,642.
Okay. How much do you think of that is coming from, you know, Canada and the United States and, I mean, probably a small portion of it.
I'm not going to even remotely try to dive into that and somehow find a measure of solace in the fact that maybe a lesser portion is coming.
We're doing our part, but what I'm saying is,
we are bad at recycling. Like, we are,
we're really better at it than other countries.
Yeah. Okay. Like,
the U.S. is leading the charge, and it can say, considering, you know, other countries that literally just dump their garbage into the ocean.
Right.
We do so, not like, do that.
So we're better. Yeah. That's not great.
But it's better than nothing.
Yeah, better being very.
Progress is progress, my friend.
Oh. Yes.
It is. It could be worse.
Tell me about Concierge Services,
Trent. Well, Concierge Services is a local in-home elder care and respite services company and is currently looking to hire personal care attendants. If you or someone you know is a naturally caring person wants to work part-time or supplement their income, contact Concierge Services at 208-964-6000. Medical licenses and certifications are not required for these non-medical care services. Personal care attendants are aides who work in a client's home. They must have compassion, patience, and a good sense of awareness. With wages starting at $15 an hour, a care attendant's job duties include minor housework, laundry, shopping, meal preparation, chores, and simply helping out the elderly and disabled in our community. A great sense of satisfaction and gratification can come from helping others. So write down this number and share it with someone that is motivated to help others today. Call Concierge Services at 208-964-6000 and apply today.
All right, that's going to move us into Monday, January 24th. Honeysuckle Beach open house is Wednesday. This is by press staff.
It is.
Community members are invited to contribute their insight to the Honeysuckle Beach and boat launch study during an open house on Wednesday, so tomorrow. The open house will take place from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. in the Hayden City Council Chambers at City Hall, located at 8930 North Government Way. The City of Hayden is engaging the public as it works to identify the solutions for Honeysuckle Beach and boat ramp challenges regarding the number of users, types of uses, and functionality for pedestrians, vehicles, and boats. Honeysuckle Beach has long been a popular summer destination as a cherished amenity for residents, from fishermen and summer campers to families. to families picnicking on the beach. The engagement process will include one-on-one interviews, a public survey, a stakeholder working group, and public open house, as well as ongoing updates through social media and the city's website. Goals of the process include gathering feedback from the city to understand the community's priorities and vision for Honeysuckle, including the perspectives of different user groups, identifying solutions to enhance the summer experience and address key issues, including number of users, types of uses, and functionality, preserving Honeysuckle as an amenity for generations to come. The Honeysuckle study started in April 2021. Since then, the study team has received feedback from more than 400 residents via a public survey in the spring 2021 and has met with stakeholders and user groups to understand needs and opportunities. Various solutions have been drafted from this input. The link to submit public comments online will be available Thursday through February 11th. Visit cityofhaydenid.us to view a recorded presentation after Thursday.
Ooh, okay. Well, interested to hear more about that. So people should go out and check that out. Is that a City of Hayden thing?
Yeah.
Why do I not know where Honeysuckle Beach is?
Probably in Hayden Lake.
Oh, that's why. I spent a lot of time around Hayden Lake growing up here, but not, I guess I didn't recreate on Hayden Lake a lot. It's not necessarily user friendly or like public friendly. Like there's only like one or two boat launches. Maybe that has changed recently, but more along the lines of if I'm usually around Hayden Lake, I'm usually going to the shooting range or something. So
I've never stepped foot in nor seen in person Hayden Lake.
No?
Yep.
I've driven around lots of times.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah, that is very wild, yeah, actually.
Just don't go there.
Prepare for a long day on the mountain with breakfast to go from McDonald's. A sausage McMuffin or a bacon, egg, and cheese McGriddle will keep you skiing all day. Hit the drive-thru on your way through town so you don't miss a minute on the slopes. Your locally owned and operated Kellogg McDonald's has got you covered. McDonald's is located at 820 West Cameron Avenue in Kellogg. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. I'm loving it. That moves into Tuesday, January 25th headlines. Headline, man shot after armed standoff. This is by Kay Thornbrew. Police shot an armed, suicidal man after an hours-long standoff near an elementary school Monday night. The man's identity and condition were not available at press time. Coonan County Sheriff's Office responded around 2 p.m. Monday to a residence near Dalton Elementary School after receiving a call about a man who was reportedly suicidal and armed with a gun. Not a great combo. The school was placed into a safety hold, a precautionary measure less extreme than a full lockdown. Safety holds go into effect when there is a potential threat in the vicinity of a school. Quote, the students were safe inside. No one was allowed to come or go during the safety hold, said Scott Mabin, the Coeur d'Alene School District's Director of Communications. At the end of the school day, sheriff's deputies and officers with the Coeur d'Alene Police Department assisted in the safe release of students to waiting buses and parents. No students were on school grounds at the time of the shooting. A reverse 911 call also went out to surrounding residents informing them of the situation. Law enforcement reportedly communicated with the man for several hours. During that time, police said the man repeatedly threatened to shoot officers on the scene. He also allegedly made threatening statements toward people at the school. Police shot the man at approximately 5:26 p.m. after he allegedly brandished a weapon at them. Medics treated the man at the scene. He was then transferred to Kootenai Health. Members of the KCSO and CDAPD were involved in the shooting, according to the news release. No police officers were injured. The North Idaho Critical Incident Task Force was activated as a result of the shooting, and Idaho State Police are investigating the event.
Yikes.
Scary situation. Glad it ended with nobody dying, amazingly.
That guy's still alive?
It doesn't say that he's dead.
Well, that's something.
Just says he was shot.
Finding solutions to housing woes. First, I've also never heard of a reverse 911 call. I mean, I'm assuming it's very similar to like the
PSA, Amber Alert.
When the school calls and like, hey, something like that. Yeah, I just never heard of a reverse 911.
That is interesting.
Finding solutions to housing woes is by Devin Weeks. The plight of scarce affordable housing in Idaho has the attention of Governor Brad Little. Quote, the governor does recognize the issue in the state, Little's North Idaho field director Jake Gerringer said Monday. During an online meeting of the Regional Housing and Growth Issues Partnership, Gerringer said the governor's recommendation in the legislature is to allocate $50 million in American Rescue Plan Act funding, ARPA. Wyatt ARPA money.
Wyatt ARPA's back.
Funding to go towards workforce housing. Quote, the governor's idea for the legislature is to develop a program and a fund that the Housing Finance Association would administer that would provide for gap finance issues, Gerringer said. His hope is that it would lead to 1,000 units across the state that would be geographically distributed to make sure that they don't all end up in the Treasure Valley. how kind. He said, hopefully, the legislator will go forward with that idea. Quote, ultimately, it's in their hands to create that program, he said. Members of the Regional Housing and Growth Issues Partnership met to discuss what is in the works regarding Idaho's housing crisis, as well as information on the Housing Availability and Affordability Study, which was released Thursday. Quote, getting this was not a solutions-oriented project, said Maggie Lyons, interim executive director of the Panhandle Affordable Housing Alliance. It was to assess for us, while we all know the challenges that we're facing, to have an independent assessment real-time through not just the data that was available, but also through stakeholder input in Kootenai County with respect to the challenges that we're facing. The Regional Housing and Growth Issues Partnership comprises officials from Kootenai County, the cities of Post Falls, Hayden, Rathdrum, and the Kootenai Metropolitan Planning Organization. The partnership includes the original working group of regional planners along with elected representatives and administrators. The advisory group comprises representatives from organizations and community groups. Both groups may have additions as topics warrant. Tenant-owned properties are another housing solution being discussed. In other communities, tenants are given opportunities to purchase the dwellings they're renting. That would be interesting.
That is very interesting.
I mean, that's one of the things, like when key investments that every human being, it's like the American dream investment.
Yes.
And it's a home and it's a car.
What is happening in Kootenai County is like the dream of capitalism, like, and the free market system, like, that it is, it's taken a hold. Like, there's a supply and demand right
Which is
now.
Ironic that so many people are upset about it.
Well, I think they're upset that people don't like change, Josh.
It's capitalists hating the free market. Well, is what it boils down to.
Yeah.
This is a consequence of what we love?
Well, I understand the irony of that, but there is no perfect system of it. And
right.
Capitalism giveth and capitalism taketh away.
Yeah. Yes.
It's not, there's no perfect system.
Yeah. If you're looking for a refreshing locally made beer, check out Radio Brewing at 319 Main Street in Uptown Kellogg. The tap room is now open 7 days a week. They offer delicious craft beer and awesome snack and food options. To learn more, visit radiobrewingcompany.com. Radio Brewing, put radio in your mouth hole.
All right, that pushes us, what would that be, east? Yeah, let's go east. To Shoshone County.
Yes.
For the Shoshone News Press headlines. Tuesday, January 25th, headline, hello potholes, my old friends.
Hello, potholes, my old friend. I'm here to destroy your alignment again.
You again. this is written by me, and that is
because
definitely a playoff.
Your tires popping softly.
Getting you a new suspension.
Leaving you stranded without service. In the vision.
Yes, that's a playoff. If you haven't picked that up, it's a playoff of Simon Garfunkel song. Or the Disturbed version, I suppose. Depending on what you've listened to, which the more popular version of that song. With the recent rise in temperatures melting off much of the ice that has caked North Idaho roadways, the Idaho Transportation Department is now tackling another one of its many winter hazards, potholes.
Oh my God, it's just so bad.
Mm-hmm. ITD Public Information Officer Megan Jans explains that crews currently have two small stretches of westbound Interstate 90 closed down due to a single single lane due to deteriorating conditions and potholes. I wouldn't be surprised if that goes up in number here soon, too. Quote, we have two trouble spots right now, Jans said. Our crews day and night shift both, but we have been patching between every storm and every blowout. The weather conditions make it such that, right now, we need to keep those portions of the lane shut down so it's not a hazard to drivers. Located at milepost 33, that's just west of the Rose Lake exit, and 48, Smelterville, the suspension-killing parts of the roadway continue to grow in the last month, and Band-Aid fixes just aren't cutting it. During this early part of winter, ITD only has the capability of making short-term fixes with a cold patch mix. Even in the best conditions, the cold patch is for only a temporary solution. When the older age of those parts of I-90 is factored in as well, it becomes less effective. Quote, when you put the patch in, it is partially staying in because of the quality of the road around the patch. In this case, it's falling apart, so there's nothing really to hold it together, Jan said. That part, it gets missed by drivers. They can be like, man, this pothole's still here, back again. We know it's going to do that. It's unfortunately a maintenance headache that we have to get through to summer and better weather conditions where we can use hot mix to repair. As for more long-term solutions, multiple factors come into play that ITD doesn't have much control over. Quote, the process to get it completely fixed is to work with an asphalt plant, the closest one being out of Hayden, Jans explains. We then have to pay them money to start operations again because their plant shut down for the winter season because there's no construction, and then find a contractor who will give us an estimate on how much the repairs are going to cost. This process could begin within the next couple of weeks, but a timetable for a complete fix is unknown at this time. While numerous rough spots can be found on the area's numerous highways, the stretches at mileposts 33 and 48 are the only two that are meriting lane closures at this time. Like I said, that probably will change. There's a fun one near Elizabeth Park here in the Silver Valley that probably...
Oh, you mean right after the bridge when How about this one? How about the one when you're coming eastbound? You've just passed Rose Lake. Mm-hmm. You're coming up and now you're in the midst of that giant turn. When all of a sudden your car is thrown violently because what has degraded down into trenches is now potholes. Mm-hmm. So you're unstable. Mm-hmm. You're bouncing around like a couple of bobsledders. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
Listeners,
fix your roads.
Listeners, it's a call to action. Send us a picture of your favorite pothole.
Oh,
we'll highlight it on the show.
You know, for a state that prides itself on never having any deaths.
Please be safe when you do that, by the way.
Spend the money.
Don't like lean.
Spend the money, fix the roads.
Don't lean out your car and take a picture.
No,
of a
pull over.
While you're driving. Yeah, like don't.
Pull over and take the picture. Stop your car on the freeway.
When convenient. No. Right in the middle of it.
Right in the middle. This is a pothole protest.
Uh-huh. That could be it. Moving on. Your standard potholes form, especially in the spring, as a result of rapidly warming temperatures following weeks of prolonged cold. Quote, whenever you have a freeze-thaw cycle, then things just warm up suddenly, and then you got some moisture. It just saturates the base of the road. It makes it really tender and makes it more susceptible to when traffic is hitting that road and wearing it down to make that hole, Jans explained. When driving through either of the closure areas, motorists are advised to use caution and keep an eye out for maintenance crews, as they are out in full force. It was just over a week ago that a suspected drunk driver entered the work zone at Milepost 33 and hit a loader that was being used to fix a pothole last Sunday. Quote, between storms, when we aren't plowing, this is what we do, Jen said. We patch potholes, we put up delineators again, and we take care of broken signs. So we are still out working. Anything else to add on to that one, Josh?
I tell you what.
You personally have been victimized a lot by potholes and divots in the road. And bumps.
Yeah, I ended up having to replace the entire suspension on my last car because of the stupid dips that apparently no one was responsible for. Apparently no one was responsible for those. They just magically appeared after some really weird pipe work was done under these specific sections of road.
To quote the people of Wallace when they're referring to the EPA, you can't prove it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I tell you what, the road situation around here is a joke. You get past Osborne heading east towards
this is Wallace the Silver Valley you're referring
yes.
to.
Okay. And you get past Osborne heading east towards the Montana border, and you then run into the patches of concrete near Wallace where every 6 seconds da dunk. How is a city?
It seems like the I-90, like in Kootenai County area, is okay, and even the highway to a degree.
How
like
about
going
that one
north,
rough
south.
Turn around yeah. the lake?
Yeah, that is one's
awful.
Yep. It seems like it's not necessarily puddle. Like over there, it's more of like buildup of water. Always.
I like how the potholes are the result of people driving. It has nothing to do with the plows or anything mm-mm. like that. No, of course not.
Never is.
Can't be anything that they might have caused. It's mm-mm. the drivers. It's the smooth rubber tires running over the road that are pulling up the asphalt, not the people pushing the 500
okay, to be fair,
steel blades.
They did also mention the age of the roads, and that is true. That section between Rose Lake and 4th of July Pass, that road, that stretch of I-90 has been rough for a long time, as long as I've been around anyway.
Yet we spend millions of dollars repaving the same sections over and over and over and over. Gosh, they've been working on that bridge around
the
lake.
Wolf Lodge Bridge.
They've been working on that bridge. Like at this point, they could have built 6 bridges. I'm so over it. It seems like
just a vent sesh on today's show.
Yeah. All right. Here's some happy news. What headline: A Giver's Heart. This is the center of the show news press today. I wrote this. The Silver Valley takes care of their own, and perhaps there isn't a better example of this than when the holidays roll around. Several examples of this generosity could be found, making it difficult to keep track of all of them. Now that the dust has really settled on the holiday season, though, folks can really see just how generous everyone was. The 2021 Silver Valley Community Christmas Fund, sponsored by the Shoshone News Press and Dave Smith, GMC, had its best year in recent memory, raising $25,037, $4,000 higher than their goal for the year. Utilizing $12,475 of the raised money, the Christmas Fund purchased food voucher certificates that were used at local grocery stores to provide holiday meals for more than 1,000 people. What remains of the funds will be donated to the Silver Valley Meals on Wheels program. The Shoshone County Clerk, Tammy Lewis Eberhard, the administrator of the funds, was thrilled with what the extra money allowed for this year. Quote, "We were able to increase the certificate for one person in a family from $25 to $35. Plus, we added an additional $5 for each family member in the home," Lewis Eberhard said. "It truly makes a difference for these folks. While every single dollar matters, nearly 60 people and businesses contributed $100 or more to the cause. Dave Smith especially got in on the holiday spirit this year, doubling down on their willingness to provide meals for locals in need. This included purchasing 500 turkeys, totaling in at almost 10,000 pounds, which were then distributed to various food banks and other charitable organizations throughout the Silver Valley. The Shoshone County Sheriff's Office also got in on the holiday fun and giving through its annual department-wide No Shave November competition. This year, they decided to donate funds that were brought into several different organizations, such as Silver Valley Meals on Wheels, the Shoshone Medical Center Foundation, as well as the local food banks. $25,000, $13,000 or $1,300 of that came from my beard.
That's impressive. You should have ran a photo of that.
No thanks.
With before and after.
Yeah, like, you know, this week on To Catch a Predator.
Well, why don't you have a seat?
Yeah.
Well, why don't you have a seat, Josh?
No.
No. Well, why don't you have a seat?
Is this
a South Park reference?
Is Destiny here? No, she's not. Why don't you sit down? Oh, okay. Watts Appliances has been providing incomparable customer service to the Silver Valley for over 50 years. The family-owned and operated business has a wealth of knowledge regarding appliances and the brands that they sell. Whether you're in need of a new washing machine or have questions about refrigerators, Watts Appliance is ready to help. Visit wattsappliance.com or stop by and visit them at 3 North Division Street in Pinehurst.
All right, that moves us north into the Bonner County Daily Bee headlines. Starting with Saturday, January 22nd, headline remains identified as missing local man. This is by Carolyn Lobsinger. So much death in this edition. Or this episode, man. Oh, okay. Human remains found in a wooded, undeveloped area in late October have been identified as belonging to a Sandpoint man reported missing in December of 1995. Cold case, okay. The remains were identified as positively belonging to Daniel Glennon, who was 32 years old at the time of his disappearance. After the remains were discovered by a logging crew in the area, an excavation of the area of Bonner County Sheriff's Office detectives, 3 members of the Bonner County Coroner's Office, and 4 students from the University of Montana Forensic Anthropology Department. The excavation, which involved digging with hand tools, sifting debris, and metal detecting, led to the discovery of additional human remains, fragments of clothing, and a .22 caliber revolver. Interesting. The items were located under up to 4 inches of dirt and debris and scattered in an area approximately 40 feet by 40 feet, BCSO officials said in a press release. Based on their condition, BCSO detectives suspected the remains were those of Daniel Glennon based on our initial recovery of remains and clothing. That visual examination indicated the remains and clothing were likely decades old. Detectives and coroner Rob Beers, Rob Beers, what a name, were able to obtain dental records from Glennon from his childhood dental office in Califin, New Jersey?
Yeah.
Califon. That's a place?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's like they wanted to be California, but they stopped halfway.
They're Califon.
Califon. These dental records and x-rays of the skull were examined by forensic
odontology.
Oh, man. Okay, thank you. Consult Lee Kopis of Hayden, Idaho. On January 13th, Dr. Kopis reported the remains matched dental records for Glennon with no discrepancies. Glennon's family has been notified of the positive identification. Preliminary investigation indicated the manner of death to be suicide. However, the remains are being forensically examined at the University of Montana. At the time of his disappearance, Glennon lived alone on Renko Loop Road and was last seen in Sandpoint in December of 1995. He was reported missing by his family in May of 1996 after not hearing from him for some time, Bonner County Sheriff's official said. Glennon was known by neighbors to enjoy hiking the area and also told his family he might move out of state for different employment. Over the years, multiple searches were conducted in the area, including by a driver searching a nearby beaver pond, BCSO official said. No leads were ever developed to explain Glennon's disappearance, and the case has remained open ever since, they said. BCSO and coroner's office officials thanked all involved in helping determine what happened to Glennon. That included the reporting citizen, the UM Forensic Anthropology Department, his neighbors on Renko Loop Road, and his family, as well as Dr. Kopis and retired BCSO Detective Howard Burke for their assistance with the case.
Interesting. Cold cases getting solved are always good. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine it's a great day for the family. I mean, he's been missing for...
It's not the answer that you want, but I guess...
26 years?
If... Now, I understand that this is a cliche, but it could bring closure.
Right. What is your relationship status with your bank? It's time to go steady with Bank CDA. You want local? You want flexible? You want Bank CDA. To learn more, visit bankcda.com.
Takes us into Sunday, January 23rd headlines.
Teen Center receives foundation grant. This is by Carolyn Lobsinger. The Sandpoint Teen Center has received grant support from the Blue Skies Foundation for the second year. The grant funding will directly support fun and challenging activities, daily healthy snacks, hot meals, and teen mentorships for area teens after school, center officials said in a press release. The foundation's goal is to bring blue skies to the youth in the community, making a partnership with the Sandpoint Teen Center a natural fit, officials said in announcing the grant. Quote, this grant funding arrived at a very important moment as we are serving an average of 35 to 60 teens per day this school year, Phyllis J., the STC program director, said. Financial support from the grants and donations provide much-needed support for hundreds of teens visiting the Sandpoint Teen Center every week, as our teen numbers have steadily grown over the last 3 years. Jay said all teens are welcome, but said all need to check with the center's staff when they arrive. That allows teens new to the center to review its no-nonsense policy to keep the facility a friendly, safe, and respectful place, she said. Activities offered at the center include pool, dodgeball, Nerf tag arena with an arcade, with air hockey, a small basketball hoop. With good behavior, Jay said teens can earn bowling lessons and participate in tournaments. A hot meal and healthy snacks are served daily. STC is located at 7B Bowling, is located at 7B Bowling Lanes on Division Avenue and is open Monday through Friday, 2:30 to 5 p.m. The center opens at 1:30 p.m. on Wednesdays to accommodate the Lake Pendere School District's early release on those days. Jay said the teen center is always looking for volunteers and staff to teach an interesting skill, class, cook, or many other ways to support its program. Quote, we also hire older teens after they complete our teen intern program, Jay said. Right now, we have two teens graduate from our culinary program cooking daily hot meals and healthy snacks for their fellow teens. It takes a community to run a wonderful program like the Sandpoint Teen Center. For more information, go online to sandpointteencenter.com or follow them on Facebook at Sandpoint Teen Center. How nice.
How nice indeed.
Yeah. Moving ahead to today. This one, it just worked out that you get to read this one.
Yes, it did. Lined up perfectly. SC3 seeking support donations. This is by Nisa Keith, or Ice Rink. With the approval of the Sandpoint Ice Arena in October, the project's organizers are looking to the community for help to making it a reality. The Sandpoint Community Center Corporation, SC3, is asking for donations to construct the arena. SC3 officials have said the purpose of the arena is to give local youth another option for spending time in the evenings during the winter months. Quote, one of our major focuses will be after-school programs for kids, Pierce said on October 26, when the project was approved by Bonner County Commissioners. Quote, increasing indoor opportunities for community members, especially during the cold and rainy months, has always been our top priority. The project is expected to cost $8 million once complete. Half of that will be paid before the ground breaks on the ice rink. SC3 is forbidden from taking on debt to fund the project, and group members saying they plan to fund the project through donations and grants. Quote, we believe the utilization of private donations to create an indoor activity center is not only prudent, but an ideal model of private and public cooperation, SC3 President Dr. Robert Pierce said November 9th. In an email campaign launched last week, Pierce said SC3 is now pursuing grant funding and searching for major donors. Pierce said in the email that smaller donations from the people are significant to the project's success. One way to support the ice arena is to sign up as a supporter, Pierce said in the email campaign. Those who sign up will receive emails from SC3 about the status of the ice arena. Those interested in donating can do so on the website as well. Pierce encourages those passionate about the ice arena to sign up other people as donors or supporters of the ice arena, even if they don't currently live in Sandpoint. Quote, we need to show a wide base of community support. We need supporters and we need to show a wide donor base. Even small donations from lots of people are needed, Pierce said on Tuesday. Construction of the ice rink will allow the fairgrounds to be more financially self-sufficient as a portion of ticket sales held in the arena will go to the fairgrounds. Going on further, one of the things that made this deal more attractive for us was that it was stipulated from the get-go that the fairgrounds would get a piece of the ticket sales, said Commissioner Chairman Dan McDonald on November 4th. We've been striving as a board to make the fairgrounds more self-sustaining. The arena will also be used in the warmer months, according to sandpointice.org. The facility will be used for concerts, trade shows, county fair events, Lost in the 50s, arts and craft fairs, inline skating. Ooh, inline skating. That'll be fun. Indoor soccer, among other activities. Project has gained vocal support from officials and other prominent figures in the community. Sandpoint Mayor Shelby Rongstad spoke in support of the ice arena after its approval by the commissioners in October. Schweitzer Mountain Resort CEO Tom Chase, who is also a SC3 board member, said that the ice arena will give winter tourists more of a reason to visit Sandpoint. That's a reason why I'll go up there. Despite a majority of positive response to the project, the ice arena has also experienced some opposition from Bonner County Sheriff Daryl Wheeler. Wheeler published a press release to the BCSO Facebook page on November 4th, claiming that the commission was giving away county land by allowing the ice arena to be built, and that construction of the rink would hamper the sheriff's office ability to expand in the future. We read that story here on the show.
That dude is...
I understand. I'm not...
He's only saying that because he wants it.
Right, well... But I mean, it's not like Daryl Wheeler like wants to build, you know, a hunting shed on the back. Like he's thinking of the sheriff's office. He's paid to think for the sheriff's office. I understand his point, and that's his job to do that.
You know, in the Dukes of Hazzard, the sheriff's the bad guy.
Okay. I mean,
he's always after the Duke boys because he wants land for his sheriff's department. And things for his sheriff's department. But
are the Duke boys really, like, following the law, though?
You're not going to tell me that there's not people in Sandpoint running moonshine.
Are the Duke boys really, like, actually totally, like, 100% innocent
in all of this? No, but the sheriff is an easy bad guy because, at the end of the day, everything he does looks greedy.
Well, sure.
And that's what this looks like.
Yeah, but he's not doing this for personal... Like, it's... Hey, I don't think anybody... Like I said... A perfect scenario here would be both parties can get what they want. There's an ice rink built and the sheriff's office can expand and build because I don't think there's, with our increase in population, I don't doubt for a second that, especially the BCSO, needs to be expanded. I don't disagree on that point. I hope that there's some way that they can be worked out to where both sides get what they need.
That's true.
There we go.
Well, once again, we'd like to thank the Silver Corner Bar and Wallace and Lux Rooms Airbnb for sponsoring this episode.
What an episode, Josh. Lots of death and destruction and...
Animal cruelty.
And
pollution.
And potholes.
Yeah. Welcome to Show.
You had one happy story in there, though, so yeah. Thanks for that, Josh.
Meanwhile, $25,000 worth of food.
Yeah, that too. All right, everybody. Thanks again for listening in. We really appreciate it. Please like, comment, and share all of our stuff on social media. If you're interested in the stories we talked about today or the ones we did not, check us out at www.coeurdaluepress.com, shoshonewspress.com, bonnercountydailybee.com, or thebonnersferryherald.com. If you listen to us on a podcatcher like Spotify, Pandora, Player FM, Google Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, Stitcher... Josh, am I missing anything? We're on a whole bunch
Apple
of them.
Apple Podcast.
We're on a lot of them. Subscribe to us so you can get every episode as soon as it comes out. And you can listen to it on your car ride home from work. And please jump over to the North Idaho Now Facebook page and give us a like on there too.
Yep.
You can see all the fun things we post on there.
Yeah.
Sometimes I get a wild hair and throw a fun meme up there or something.
Excellent.
All right. Thanks again. And we'll see you on Friday.
Bye-bye.